Hello and welcome to the Scholar Circle, scholarcircle.org. I'm Maria Armudian. States with controversial or racist histories are struggling to overcome the influence of these memories on contemporary politics. Is the U.S. haunted by its racist past? What can it do to overcome this history? Doug Becker explores.
I'm Doug Becker. In recent weeks, the news in the United States has been filled with stories of statues and public spaces being altered or removed of its controversial subjects. These are usually connected with the U.S.'s racist past, with a particular eye towards the institution of slavery. In this segment, we will explore the debate and examine what this past means for American identity, as well as what it means in contemporary politics. My guest is Jessica Auchter, Associate Professor of Political Science and Public Policy at the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga. She's the author of The Politics of Haunting and Memory. And as the author of The Politics of Haunting and Memory, my first question is, how much is the U.S. haunted by its past, and what does that mean for contemporary American politics?
This is a great question. For me, I think being haunted is a choice. So I would say we have to choose to pay attention to ghosts, that it's an ethical and political choice. And for me, this is very much the debate that's going on right now related to statues in the United States, where some are suggesting we're paying insufficient attention to the ghosts of our past. Some are suggesting that we should be paying particular types of attention. So it is very much a debate about which ghosts we should be paying attention to, which stories of our own history come to light, and then how that translates into particular policies or understandings of history. And I think in many ways, this is not unlike the conversations that were had after the fall of Nazi Germany. Who bears responsibility? Who's to blame? What's the role of ordinary people? You've seen an immense emotional response related to this dilemma of guilt or responsibility. And so I think there's also the question of what the role of our emotions is in relation to how we understand our own history. So in some of my research, I've looked at how these sort of ghostly traces disrupt our efforts to try to understand events in linear ways. And I think that's what we're seeing here, is people are striving to sort of achieve a linear understanding of these events, but it may not actually be there. And in grasping for that, they're arriving at radically different understandings of our own history. So I think paying attention to ghosts is a choice. So the U.S. is haunted by its past insofar as individuals who are citizens choose to be haunted by that past and choose to pay attention to those issues. I think we're increasingly coming around to that sort of public opinion.
So with that in mind, if it's your choice, why not just set the past in the past and not dredge up all of these terrible memories, all these, this terrible haunting? Why not just ignore it?
There's a lot of people making that argument with regards to this history that, race is only an issue if we talk about it and these sorts of things. But the problem is that up until this point, there's been a very particular version of history that's been told. So I think the question is, the debate that's being had right now about these monuments is an effort to ask, what version of history are we turning into monuments, and which voices are being silenced in that? So maintaining the status quo isn't not listening to ghosts at all. It's listening to some ghosts rather than others, I guess I would say. So I think that we should acknowledge that any outcome of this, keeping statues, getting rid of statues, is a particular version of history, which includes particular voices. So maintaining the status quo doesn't mean that sort of you don't have these conversations. It just means they may not be had out in the open. It still involves a whole host of voices that are still being silenced in an attempt to arrive at this particular idea of communal memory.
So this is really more about public space and public discourse versus private discourse. And laying this bare so we can have an honest conversation about the past as opposed to simply forgetting. I know there's certain authors, David Reif's famous title of his book in print was In Praise of Forgetting, or The Importance of Forgetting. Part of the idea of this is being haunted means it's really difficult to forget.
Yes,
and there's consequences to that.
Absolutely. I think that for me, what has been so interesting about the debates that have emerged is that we're really seeing more attention paid to how public memory and communal memory gets constructed. And in the past, we sort of took stories for granted. We didn't pay much attention to causes and processes. But now you're seeing a lot of effort to try to complicate the picture. And so for scholars who are interested in memory like myself, the most interesting thing is seeing the general public actually attentive to the way that memories get formed, the way they get solidified through monuments. And I think you're right that what we're seeing is a turn from sort of individual conversations about many of these issues within people's homes to these sorts of issues becoming a significant part of public discourse.
One of the ironies of this is those of us who've studied any sort of, you know, American foreign policy and American history are familiar with this concept of American exceptionalism, that the U.S. is somehow this unique case. But this pushback against the acknowledgement of a controversial, if not downright, you know, criminal past, or at least criminal acts in that past, is actually quite consistent with how most countries have dealt with their history of atrocities. You mentioned Nazi Germany, but Germany is actually a bit out of the ordinary in their acknowledgement of their past. I think of countries like, you know, Turkey's refusal to acknowledge the Armenian genocide, or the Japanese shifting of responsibility for crimes committed, you know, during the Second World War. How similar is the U.S. to those types of campaigns? How much does this debunk this notion of American exceptionalism, and that most countries don't really want to come to grips with their pasts?
Yeah, I think you're right that the German case is the exception rather than the rule. And one thing that we've seen is that even in the current debate, the sort of self-examination of the perhaps sordid details of U.S. history is being labeled in some corners as profoundly unpatriotic, which of course I think is problematic. I think critique is the highest form of patriotism. And we should be asking ourselves, which part of our history do we want to embrace? Which parts do we not want to embrace? But those aren't debates that are being had in most places about the sort of historical evolution of particular countries. And so in that sense, the U.S. is no different. And a lot of that, I think, comes to the relationship between memory and identity, that countries are literally built, their identities are built on a sort of mythological story, not myth in the sense of not being true, but myth in the sense of this sort of founding story that's told about sort of the country, its values, its ideals. And we know that countries are built on those, and often that is intimately associated with how they remember their own pasts and how those in power remember those pasts. And so it gets back to which voices are part of that conversation of how we should understand our own past. And the fewer voices we include in that, the less likely we are to properly examine the historical account. And I think that does put us in the category of many other countries, but I think it's not a category you want to be in if you're lumped with sort of Turkish genocide denialists. And we should be wary of that. I think examining one's history doesn't mean undermining values that are shared among Americans or things that we hold up to be laudatory in U.S. history or in the contemporary context. But it does mean having a real account about what ideals we may not like so much that have shaped our history and how we reckon with that and the voices that may still be being silenced as a result of those legacies.
One of the fundamental drives in memory research is the recovery of memories of invisible populations. That's one of the more common themes. And broadly, if these are communities that are left out of the national discourse about its own history, it has a profound implication for whether or not these communities are fully a part of the political community in the present. So when Americans don't speak of the experiences, the memories of indigenous populations, what does that mean for contemporary indigenous peoples and whether or not they're considered to be a part of the American identity? But that being said, this is a very, very painful discourse, in particular for dominant communities. So how do you bridge that gap between the need to recognize communities that are generally, historically, they've been invisible, and including their discourse without coming to the conclusion that American history is really nothing but negative, as opposed to, I think the way we would probably both describe it, is that it's complicated more than it is necessarily negative.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're right. People have a strong emotional connection, regardless of sort of what side of the so-called debate you're on in the US, because people create their identities in relation to memory, and to be told, well, your memory isn't accurate or something like that, it can be deeply problematic to help people understand themselves as part of an American political community. I think for me, the part of the answer or the solution comes in acknowledging, as you said, that these things are complicated. I think a lot of the way that I've seen this debate framed is, we need to sort of uncover this history that exists at the base of it, that there's this truth, and if we could just uncover it and agree on it, then that's all that's needed. And there's this attempt to persuade the other side of what historical truth really is. But I'm not sure that that exists. In some ways, I'm not certain there is this sort of uncoverable truth. Not that there's no facts, but when it comes to sort of memories of these things, there's no single story of Robert E. Lee or George Washington or whoever. I mean, these sorts, how we understand our history is a political decision. And part of how these complex sort of figures have become distilled into very sort of linear representations of themselves. And this is part of how historical memory emerges, by distilling the complicated into the simple. But if there's one thing we can do to sort of further this conversation, it's, I think, return back to the complicated from the simple and attempt not to sort of not to simplify this. The question isn't, you know, is Robert E. Lee bad or good? There's a lot of nuance. Good people can do bad things. Bad people can do good things. So I think the question instead is, you know, what values do we agree on that are inclusive in this country? How does that relate to issues that we've had in our history that may still have lingering effects for marginalized populations in the US? And then what do we do about symbols of that history that there may be contestation over? And those conversations are more important than what happens with the statues themselves, from my perspective at least.
Absolutely. In your book, this notion of haunting is sort of this common theme about haunting, that souls or whatever has existed in the past cannot fully rest if there's some injustice that has gone unrecognized or unresolved. You make the reference to the revenant, the concept of the revenant. And actually, one of the things I find fascinating about hauntology-type themes in fiction is typically the ghost cannot rest if there's some injustice that hasn't been addressed. How accurate is that as far as wrestling with the U.S.'s past, that we can't think about putting any of these ghosts to rest without some degree of justice? And is acknowledgement enough of a justice, or should we be talking about things like reparations, restitution, or some physical or some, you know, some specific manifestation of redressing historical injustice?
This is a difficult question, and I think perhaps a question that I shouldn't be answering, because I'm not a member of the populations that have been directly impacted by some of these historical contexts or policies, although I do have immigrant ancestry in the US. But I think that from my perspective, a lot of the injustice comes from our lack of encounter with the sort of complexities associated with this ideas that people, that with these ideas that, not to say that there are not sort of very real material injustices, but when it comes to the debate over the statues, I think the material injustices take their form in these sort of larger stories we tell about American founding and about these sort of key juncture events in US history, like the Civil War. So I think I would say it is a more complex issue than one simple answer to what constitutes justice. But in general, I advocate that populations that have directly experienced injustice or violence historically should be the ones to sort of partner with those in power to develop solutions. And I think this is true whether it is a situation of sort of post-genocide reconciliation or the kind of historical memory issues we're talking about in the U.S. Regardless of that case, the more I'll call it sort of survivor voices, drawing on the language from a genocide context, but the more survivor voices that are at the table to determine these, I think the less likely you are to see policies that continue to marginalize those voices. That's what we should be aiming for, at least.
Yeah, the importance of conversation and listening. I think it can play a significant role. Now, the president has pushed back on these campaigns and seemingly, you know, sees a political value in what I would term the politics of backlash. The backlash against taking down statues is backlash against altering history. So with that in mind, first of all, how common is this backlash, and how much can we expect that this is going to remain an extremely complicated push and pull of racial identities and community identities within the U.S. that's going to extend well beyond, you know, our current conversation?
I think what we're seeing right now is that the politics of emotion is an incredibly effective and valuable political tactic. And that's on multiple sides of this sort of debate. And I think that has changed the discourse to the point that it's very difficult to have a kind of engaged conversation about the issues that are really at the heart of it. So it has become more about the symbols or the representations than about the sort of actual discussions and debates about history, about how this is impacting populations. So I think that's the issue. And until those that have benefited from the sort of historical policies that were put in place acknowledge that they do have a role in this, or that they do have like skin in the game, so to speak, I don't think we'll see anything change. In the post-World War II German context, they had this sort of informal chant, which was collective guilt, no, collective responsibility, yes. One thing we've seen is that the ideas of guilt and responsibility have become conflated in the way that this discussion is proceeding in the US. So I would like to see those separated out a bit and a real conversation about what responsibility looks like and about how we're collectively responsible for our own history and then what that means going forward. And that's something very different than individual guilt or even collective guilt. So there may be something to learn from that sort of thing. But do I have any hope that the conversation will turn more towards the sort of meat of the issues at play? Unfortunately, I don't. But I think the first step towards that conversation is beginning, and that is starting to complicate the picture that a lot of Americans have been taught of their own histories, and starting to understand that the story that has been told is not necessarily the only story that exists, and that there have been political choices made about, you know, how we construct our identity through our understanding of history. And that's true in the US, and it's true in other countries as well. But those are political choices, which means we can choose something else. And so in that sense, there's some degree of hope for a better sort of conversation or a better dialogue moving forward.
Absolutely. I think the real key here is that we have choices, and the importance of communication about those choices and the impact that the history has and the empowerment of communities that have typically been left out of the historical discourse and therefore left out of what it means to be American. Thank you very much. Our guest today has been Jessica Auchter. She is the Associate Professor of Political Science and Public Policy at the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga, and she is author of the wonderful Politics of Haunting and Memory. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.